From muddy jungle paths to snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder is ready to take you to some of the most phenomenal destinations on Earth. In a Pathfinder, it's more than just the arrival. The real excitement comes from the ride to get there. With 7 drive modes, Pathfinder's available intelligent 4-wheel drive is built for some of the most epic journeys. So chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures in the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. Intelligent 4-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
You are listening to a Live Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mint Climate Change Tracker, a podcast where we talk about the challenges posed by a rapidly heating planet. I'm your host, Vivek Bhattacharya. I hope you and your loved ones are safe and well. As you all know, the pandemic lockdown continues. As of right now, it's supposed to end on 31st May. However, don't be surprised if it continues beyond that date, as the country opens up in a slow and gradual manner. As for me, I'm working from home, including recording this podcast from home. This isn't a studio, so my apologies in advance if a loud bird or my neighbor's dog or one of my cats make it to the recording. This brings me to the subject of this episode, the importance of the group effort, the collective. In the context of the COVID-19 pandemic, we often hear the phrase, we're all in it together. But what does that mean exactly? I mean, it's true, we are all threatened by the pandemic, but some, like doctors, sanitation workers, and others engaged in delivering essential services are much more at risk than you and me. The misery of the migrant workers without money, food, or water, trudging hundreds of kilometers to get back home is one that we can't even imagine. It's a national shame. Given the world's inequalities, some will suffer much more disproportionately and much earlier than others. As far as countries go, for example, the most immediately at risk will be the small island nation states. They may succumb to rising seas sooner rather than later. As far as people go, as usual, the hardest hit will be the poor. As we've seen during the pandemic, they are the most vulnerable, the least protected, and the most easily abandoned. On 20th May, Super Cyclone Amphan hit West Bengal. As winds of 150 to 160 kilometers per hour caused incredible damage, it was the poorest who bore the brunt. 3 lakh people were evacuated from coastal areas before the cyclone made landfall, but given the destruction, it will take them a long time to pick up the pieces. Ultimately, the climate crisis will come for us all, like it did both for slum dwellers and for people living in posh high-rises in Kolkata. In fact, cities like Mumbai and Kolkata could be underwater in 50 years. So yes, climate change is already here. It is already happening. And we are indeed all in it together. Which is why we need to act as a collective, as a group, collaborating and helping mitigate the crisis. On this note, I'd like to introduce my guest for today, Shloka Nath. Shloka is the Executive Director of India Climate Collaborative, or the ICC. The ICC is a collaborative effort between industry leaders, including Anand Mahindra, Ratan Tata, Rohini Nilekani, Aditi and Rishad Premji, Nadir Godrej, and others to address the climate crisis. Apart from them, the ICC also has over 45 organizations as members. These include the Energy and Resources Institute, or TERI, the Ashoka Trust for Research on Ecology and Environment, the Center for Policy Research, the Center for Science and Environment, and the Council on Environment, Energy and Water. A former journalist, Shloka studied public policy at the Harvard Kennedy School and graduated in politics and economics from the London School of Economics and Political Science. She also heads Tata Trust Sustainability and Special Projects. For Shloka, the ICC presents a chance to tell a uniquely Indian story on tackling the climate crisis. Welcome to the show, Shloka. The first thing I'd like to ask is, how exactly does the ICC work, bringing together as it does such disparate worlds as corporate philanthropy, think tanks, and grassroots organizations?
Hi, Vivek. Thanks so much for having me on your show today. So it's a great question. And it's one, you know, we're still sort of working on. But, you know, having said that, I think the vision has always been to create a platform that really worked as a coordinated ecosystem of Indian donors, implementers, government representatives, businesses, academia, civil society, and communities. Who have all come together to work together, and you know, they also function with a lot of support from the international climate community. So the ICC is this sort of group or community, if you will, of collective action to drive coordinated investment and to connect diverse voices, and in doing so, to craft a uniquely Indian response to climate change, one that is attuned to our needs and development priorities. I think one thing that I definitely want to point out here is that the ICC is unique and important, because it is not championing one solution or one approach. It exemplifies what we know, which is no one is protected and everyone has a responsibility. Right. So an initiative like ours is really important, not only because it takes a stand on a highly complex issue like climate change, but also because it's a powerful instance of true collaboration in the Indian philanthropic and corporate sector.
Right. Tell me this, what was some of the work that the ICC was doing before the pandemic hit? And also, if you can tell me what you guys are doing now while the lockdown is on.
The world that we're experiencing now under the pandemic is the world that most climate change advocates or activists or, you know, people working in the space of climate change have been sort of have been really warning everyone else about. You know, the fact that global shocks are likely to increase, that we're going to be living in a world where you're going to see, you know, sort of these increasing health epidemics. And, you know, I think we're facing something that we sort of envisioned a very, very long time ago in the climate change debate or arena. And so it's only brought home a lot of the sort of truths that we were preparing for. So what we were doing prior to this is, as you well know, is ensuring that there was enough collective will to act and to coordinate, to bring together this wide range of actors, to exchange ideas, information, as well as best practices. And, you know, sort of framing this long-term agenda for tackling climate change. Mm-hmm. I think what we're doing now is we sort of, as I said, it's almost like hyperspeed. You know, we've had to like jump a few light years into this like reality where we are not only dealing with the current crises, and so how do we build in resilience into the moment, the disaster and the sort of unimaginable human tragedy that is unfolding before us, but how do we seek to think long-term about protecting these incredibly vulnerable communities? Because, and this is something I truly believe from the bottom of my heart, the similarity between COVID-19 and climate change is that it's always going to affect the most vulnerable amongst us.
While the pandemic is on, what are the kind of things that the ICC is looking to do at this moment? Like, I know that you guys are doing a series of webinars, for example. Mm-hmm. But so just tell me a little about what you're doing right now.
So in India, the virus has placed a disproportionate burden on our poorest communities, and the lasting impacts these past few months will have on the coming years really shows that our societies have under-prioritized and under-invested in resilience.
Right.
So with climate change, as with COVID-19, only in retrospect are we going to understand the extent of the damage that, you know, we have caused by not acting sooner. And in India, climate change has and will continue to disproportionately burden our poorest communities by exacerbating these very same economic and social shocks, right, leading to huge economic losses and wide-scale migration. We're already seeing this. History has already shown us that periods of recession are followed by short-term focus on incentivizing growth at any cost. And that's where we come in.
Right.
Because we're already seeing countries relax environmental regulations. They're allowing sort of greater air, land, and water pollution. And this forced pause that we're facing right now has also provided us an opportunity to consider what parts of our previous world we want to rescue and rebuild, and what parts can we reimagine,
right,
conserve our wildlife and biodiversity. So in order to sort of bring together the culmination of a lot of these deep questions, we've created New Worlds, India in a Rapidly Changing Climate, a three-part digital series to discuss resilience and recovery in the face of these two planetary challenges, COVID and climate change. So the aim of the series is really to give the audience a chance to connect with the climate community, to participate in a conversation about these pressing issues with leading climate experts, economists, and business leaders. And we also really hope that this will allow us to maintain momentum on climate action during this challenging time, while being able to learn from the changes unfolding around us so that we can chart out a future for India that's equitable, resilient, and sustainable.
Personally, how did you become involved and become a part of the climate change conversation? What were your motivations behind being a part of this?
So from a personal and emotional level, this is something that I deeply, deeply believe in. I am one of those people or those kids who was really fortunate to grow up with a family that was wildlife obsessed. I was one of those kids who grew up, you know, in the jungle before she could walk. And so for me, that connection to nature was a very sort of absolute one. You know, it was formed at a very young age. Mm. And my brother was a huge environmentalist. And then about 7 years ago, Vivek, he passed away.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you. It was quite obviously a huge tragedy for us all, but it was an accident, and it was just one of those things that, you know, came out of the blue and from nowhere. Mm. I had, you know, spent a lot of my 20s and very disconnected actually from nature. I'd completely sort of moved away and, you know, and was living a very, very different reality. And when he passed away, it was a wake-up call, I remember. And I'd always been involved in the development sector, but I'd been focused more on sort of financial inclusion. And, you know, that had been my spectrum of, you know, where I wanted to seek impact. And I'd been a journalist for the decade prior to that. And when he passed away, I remember the only thing that brought me any healing and any peace and any sense of connection back to him was being back in nature. And then it was this journey of, you know, sort of self-discovery and healing and, you know, reconnecting with someone you've lost, you know, through sort of, you know, this planet and this incredible earth and the world around us. And it was the one thing that gave me the most solace. And as I got more sort of, as I reconnected to my roots, I also started to realize, and this is back in, you know, 2013 or so, I started to realize how much the climate change conversation was starting to seep into sort of the mainstream.
Right.
And, you know, it had started building up in India. It was still very niche, but there was, you know, this whole sense that this was becoming, you know, very quickly and very rapidly, probably the greatest challenge of our time. And it was so linked to poverty alleviation. It was so linked to sort of, you know, the economic shocks and the vulnerabilities that I had already been studying and involved in from the perspective of, you know, my previous career. And so it was this sort of, you know, coming together of something that was deeply emotional and just something that had reminded me and restored my sense of beauty in the world, as well as, of course, this desperate need to protect it. I think that's the one thing that people don't realize about the climate change conversation today, is that it's not so much about saving the planet. The planet will restore.
Right.
The planet will regenerate. It will go on without the human species. The problem is, I don't think the human species will survive. So it's just as much a question of our own survival as it is, of course, wanting to protect so many living species and beings on this planet that share this planet with us.
So thank you very much, Shloka, for being on the show. And it was excellent talking to you about climate change, and all the best for your endeavors. That was Shloka Nath, the Executive Director of the India Climate Collaborative. That's it from me today. Join me next week as I speak to a special guest and also bring you up to speed with news of the climate crisis. Follow this podcast and my column in Mint Lounge on Twitter with the hashtag MintClimateTracker. Follow HT Smartcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram with the handle @HTSmartcast. We'd love to hear from you, so write to us at podcasts@hindustantimes.com. Listen to more podcasts on htsmartcast.com and subscribe to this one on any of your favorite platforms, including Apple, Spotify, Google, and JioSaavn. I am Vivek Bhattacharya, and you've been listening to the Mint Climate Change Tracker. See you all next week. And remember, the climate clock is ticking.
This was a Livemint production, brought to you by HD Smartcast.
HD Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
From muddy jungle paths to snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder is ready to take you to some of the most phenomenal destinations on Earth. In a Pathfinder, it's more than just the arrival. The real excitement comes from the ride to get there. With 7 drive modes, Pathfinder's available intelligent 4-wheel drive is built for some of the most epic journeys. So chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures in the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. Intelligent 4-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.